Welcome. This is a sermon from Hope Community Church. We're glad you're here.
Okay, good morning. It's good to see everybody. This is kind of the, I would say, like the pinnacle of the book of Job. We finally get to hear God's response to this. And on the surface, you know, his response may be different than what you would expect. So, in other words, if you read the book of Job from the beginning, you see this righteous man who has been exposed to the most incredible suffering. He lost everything, his family, his possessions, and here's a guy who was, in a sense, blameless before God in the sense that he hadn't done anything wrong to deserve this wrath that he received. And so what we would want, and at least in my mind, is when God finally speaks, you want him to explain why he allowed all this to happen. Like, okay, and then so essentially what that would do is it would give us insight into why we suffer, right? Because we see suffering all around, and a lot of times we want to know why suffering occurs, and we would think, this is the perfect time to explain all that. God's just going to give us all the details on why we suffer. And instead, God doesn't do that at all. He does something somewhat unexpected. But I think when you reflect on it, it's, well, okay, I'm going to judge God's response and give him an okay on it, which is really crazy. Anyway, that's where I was going to go, and then I realized how stupid that was. But his response is obviously a perfect response for this situation. And it's one that really, as I've thought about the response, it's really been beneficial to me. And that's not the whole point of this, is to be beneficial to you, but it's to become more in awe of who God is. And I think that's what his response does, is it puts us in a position of being in awe of God. And remember, we described that as one of the characteristics of the fear of God, is kind of being in awe of him. And his response, I think, does that. And here's what's amazing. This response that was given thousands and thousands and thousands of years ago still holds up today in the fact that it should put us in awe. So let's go through this and see how this plays out. A lot of this, and I have it noted, but a lot of it comes from a writing that I had read from Tim Mackey that just does a great job explaining this. So I'll start off with kind of his summary of it and build into God's response. So he says, eventually Job and his friends have nothing to say to each other anymore. And Job takes up his final position before God in chapters 29 through 31. And I'm not going to review that. That's just, if you want to go back and look at these chapters, feel free to do that. So that's kind of what we saw in those chapters, is there had been a lot of going back and forth, and eventually there's just no more going back and forth. They've kind of exhausted their position. So this is Job. It says, he laments the days of his past when his body was healthy and his life was filled with family and friends. And again, just think about this. This was like the most blessed man at that time. You know, his kids loved being together. In fact, they were having celebrations together when they all perished. You know, there was no conflict in the family. You know, imagine that. We don't see that much today. But, you know, he was thinking back to those good old days, and he was like, what is going on? Why is my life in ruins? And then finally, if you remember, through the initial sufferings, he held a good attitude, one of continuing to worship God, one in honoring God. But then we see that his present sufferings is no longer endurable. He's been beat down. He's had enough. And again, in all the comforts we have in today's world, there's a ridiculous proportion of especially youth who feel that they can no longer endure their life. Like, this is something that, again, is relatable. Even with We have hot showers. We have warm homes. We have food. Like, our biggest issue is eating too much, not getting enough, right? Like, but yet we still can relate to Job today with saying, man, I don't know if I can go on. And then this is the interesting part where he demands that God provides an explanation. Okay, he wants to hear from God, and he's going to. And then so after enduring a long-winded response from Elihu, and that's what that whole chapters that we looked at last week, there's like four chapters that dealt with this. Then here we go. God himself speaks up and responds to Job in a series of speeches that form the climax of the book so far. And that's what we're going to hear. Okay, we're going to hear God's response to Job. Okay? And this is where it gets interesting. So God offers two responses. And I love how Tim Mackey describes this. He says that first he offers a virtual tour of the cosmos. And that's what we're going to look at today. So God's response to Job having all of these problems and all of this suffering, God takes Job and takes him way back and gives him the right perspective. Okay? And we're going to look at that in a little more detail. And then God asks Job impossible questions like this. So this is God responding on this cosmic tour. And again, we're going to spend time on this section. But let me read through God's response as he records, as it's recorded. It says, then the Lord answered Job from a whirlwind. Who is this that questions my wisdom with such ignorant words? Brace yourself like a man, because I have some questions for you, and you must answer them. I just have to say, I really value God's response, because I feel a little more justified in some ways how I talk to my kids, right? Like, as a dad, you read that, you're like, yes, that's how you do it, God. So I like that. He's like, brace yourself. He's like, you know, you basically, you're ignorant. You don't know what you're talking about. And I'm going to start to enlighten you right now, right? Okay. Where were you when I laid the foundations of the earth? Tell me if you know so much. Who determined its dimensions and stretched out the surveying line? What supports its foundations? And who laid its cornerstone? As the morning stars sang together and all the angels shouted for joy. So he's starting to challenge Job. He's starting to say, hey, wait, let's relax a little bit. Let's start to think about who designed this earth that you're living on? Okay, how is this ball of dirt spinning around in nothingness and staying together? Okay, who did this? Have you ever commanded the morning to appear and cause the dawn to rise in the east? Have you made daylight spread to the ends of the earth and bring an end to the night's wickedness? So just even think about that. Like, how does day and night happen every day? Right? Like, we just kind of take that for granted. Oh yeah, sun's going to come up, sun's going to go down. He's like, who does that? Right? Have you explored the springs from which the seas come? Have you explored their depths? Do you know where the gates of death are located? Have you seen the gates of utter gloom? Do you realize the extent of the earth? Tell me about it if you know. Okay, so as you read this, again, this is Job who lost everything, and this is what he's hearing. He's starting to hear that, Job, I probably know more than you do. In fact, I know I do, because look at what you're on, this earth. Start to look at the sky and see the stars. And start to try to fathom how big I am as God. And how maybe there's more to this than what you see. And what's available to your brain. And again, I think this is so important for today. Because we have so much information available to us, we think we know so much. And God would have the same response for us today, I believe. Where does light come from? And where does darkness go? Can you take each to its home? Do you know how to get there? But of course you know all this, for you were born before it was all created, and you are so very experienced. So again, you've probably talked like this to your kids, right? When they think they know a little more than you, and you start talking about how, you know, you drove in a car without a seatbelt and without air conditioning, and you know all the things, right? And they're starting to get a, when you start to explain how much farther down the road you are than they are, they can start to establish their right position in trusting you. And I believe that's what God is doing for every single person on this earth right now. He's saying, I'm bigger than you. I'm farther down the road than you. In fact, I've always been here. You haven't. Right? And again, he gets a little snarky with him. He's like, oh, no, you were born before it was all created, right? Like, you know all this. And again, you feel Job just getting smaller and smaller and smaller. And that's not a bad thing. In fact, there's going to be a video that I'm going to play for you that talks about that. We think we're the center of the universe. And in fact, you know, again, as parents, we've actually created kids who think they're the center of the universe. And I think God sometimes would say, no, that's not where, they're not the center of the universe. Like, you don't realize how small you are. In fact, you don't realize how small your kid is, even though they're the center of your universe. And then he goes on and says, who created a channel for the torrents of rain? Who laid out the path for the lightning? Who made the rain fall on barren land and a desert where no one lives? Who sends rain to satisfy the parched ground and makes the tender grass spring up? So again, he's just talking about all these things that there's no answer to, right? Like who's in charge of all this? How does this all happen? Can you direct the movements of the stars? Binding the cluster of Pleiades or loosening the cords of Orion? Can you direct the constellations through the season or guide the bear with her cubs across the heavens? Do you know the laws of the universe? Can you use them to regulate the earth? So those constellations, you know, makes me think of a couple things. One, I always think of Kirk, and he's NASA. And then I also think of, if you've ever been to like Cumming College, the planetarium, when people could be together, the first Friday or last Friday, one of the Fridays they would have the planetarium open up at Lake Cumming College. Did you guys ever go to that? You sit in this really comfortable chair and you go back. It's and then they light up the stars and they show them all to you. It's a really cool experience. And they talk about these different constellations. And this was, again, I'm really thankful that I got to spend some time in Papua New Guinea, this remote island where there's no electricity. It's near the equator. Something I didn't realize, that when you live on the equator, it gets light and dark at the same time throughout the whole year, right? It's like 5 to 5 or something, 6 to 6, 6 a.m. to 6 p.m., it's light and dark. So it always gets dark early, which was a little weird. And so at 6 o'clock, it gets dark. It's pitch dark, and, you know, there's no electricity, so there really wasn't any light. And you just find yourself going, and just kind of looking up, right? Because there's not much to do. We don't have night time until when we turn lights off, right? Or until we fall asleep. It's much different. And this, I think, is significant. It's important to look up and see the skies. Because it's a really crazy way to, I'm kind of getting to the end of the sermon right now, but it's a crazy way to deal with suffering or to deal with not having answers, is to essentially God saying, go lay down in your backyard and look at the stars and start to recognize how little you are and how, and we can start to understand how far away these stars are and how the light is taking millions of years to get to the earth and all that's happening around us, and just start to get in the right position before God. It's just such a crazy response to suffering. But anyway, these constellations, they were extremely important to them. That's how they navigated. It's how they got around. And again, you can't imagine how bright they are when there's no electricity. I've said that a million times. It's unbelievable. The constellations are so much different in that environment. We're lucky to be here. When my wife and I lived in Philadelphia, you looked up, you just saw orange. It was just an orange glow. I mean, it was stunning when we would drive home at night. We did it at night because we didn't have air conditioning in our car. But drove home at night, and then you get out, and you look up, and it's breathtaking. But again, when you look up, I want you to start to think about how small you are. Okay? And that's okay. Your self-esteem will get over it. It's good for you. So, Job, in response to all this cosmic tour, the correct response to all these questions is for Job to say, no, I don't command the universe. I don't know the answer to any of these questions, and that I've only lived a short time. Okay? So, what we're going to do now is, as they get things ready, is this made me think back to an old video. I don't know, it might be like 10 years now. And it's Louis Giglio does this like 40-minute video. It's called There's Significance in Insignificance. Like, it really does, the smaller you can realize you are, the point of that is to make God more and more significant. And not only that, the smaller and smaller you can see that you are, and then you read verses where, like, God knows all the number of hairs on your head, right? Like, each one of us. That's so hard to comprehend. But what it is it's just, I think it's so necessary to understand that we don't have to get all the answers right now. We want the answers right now. We want to know what God's doing. We want to know why, you know, I tried doing everything right and things are wrong and people are dealing with sickness and why is that? And we want answers to that. And God is saying, I'm not going to give those to you necessarily. He may not. But if he doesn't, one thing we just need to be reminded of is God is really big, but he knows me intimately and he cares. And it's okay if I don't know the answer right now. And that's hard. But I love how Job, though, in light of hearing God's response, of finding out that God's big and Job's small, it does allow him to stop questioning God and stop doubting God and start to trust him. In fact, that's what we're going to see here next. And the response says, the point seems to be this. Job claimed that God had fallen asleep at the wheel in running the universe. I love that sentence. And I think about how often I accuse God of that. Right? What do we say? We're like, God, where are you? What do we mean when we say that? What we mean is, God, you've fallen asleep. You're not doing your job. You got to think back. Whenever we have those thoughts, I just encourage you, go out and look at the night sky and say, no, he has not fallen asleep. He's keeping all these stars that are millions of miles away, billions, and even, you know, they just go on, and he's got them all moving in the right spot, and everything is under control. He's got it. And because of this divine neglect, he's had to endure unjust suffering. Job did experience unjust suffering, but it wasn't because of divine neglect. And again, that's what the stars are reminding Job. Just incredible. In fact, God is privy to all kinds of perspectives and details that Job has never even imagined and never will. I skipped down. I apologize. I'll go up to the top of that. God's response is indirect, and it shows how his attention is actually on every single detail of operation in the universe, or of the universe. Which again, it's gotta allow you to just take comfort. I think of this. You can think of a parent, as I said, and child, or you can think of like a soldier and someone who's in charge of the troops, right? Like you're like a soldier is just kind of in the middle of a battle and doesn't know what's going on and is like, man, what is this right or what's happening here? Am I doing anything of any value? But there's a captain or whatever the right term is, someone who's overseeing that, who has a much bigger perspective on what's going on in that battle. And he can talk to them and be like, no, here's what's going on. Like what you're doing is just part of this big event that we're in. I got a better view of the whole situation. It's okay. Keep at it. Again, it's people having that perspective that's farther away than us that starts to give us comfort. And that's what God is doing to Job. He's going all the way out. Outside the universe and saying, I have it all under control. So, following the cosmic tour, God takes Job on a corresponding virtual tour of part of the world that he actually does inhabit, the earth. So now he goes from cosmos, or like the heavens, and then goes down to the earth. And here's what's shocking. Job doesn't even know what's going on there. He can't even provide answers for there. So I just love this. And I encourage you to kind of read through this and think on this more. I mean, I've had the advantage of thinking on this for weeks, so it's hitting me in a significant way. And so I hope it does you too as you spend time thinking about this. Okay, go ahead. So this is Job 38. This is where he's now talking about earth. So this is God responding to Job. And he goes, can you stalk prey for the lioness and satisfy the young lion's appetites as they lie in their dens or crouch in the thicket? Who provides food for the ravens when their young cry out to God? And wonder about in hunger. So, you know, he's just starting to just like, Job, how does all of nature work? Right, you gotta keep going. Do you know when the wild goats give birth? what a crazy verse, but it's so true. Like, how does this all happen? Like, how do frogs know to go and bury themselves in the bottom of a pond right now, live there for 5-6 months, and how do they know to come out of the mud, and then when they come out of the mud, to sing a certain song that attracts the same species so that they can reproduce? How does that happen? And as we think about it, it's got to put us in a perspective that someone designed all this. So he goes on with wild goats. I think about spring peepers. It doesn't matter. Have you watched as deer were born in the wild? I mean, think about the birthing process. This is unbelievable. Do you know how many months they carry their young? Are you aware of the time of their delivery? Quick note on that. This is so precise, like for deer in our area, right? Gary Alt did a study on this. There's like a 2-week period of time for a deer to be born to have success for that season, for that year. In other words, if they're born too soon, there's not enough food available to feed them, so the mom can't feed the baby, and the baby doesn't have a good chance of surviving. If they're born too late, then they're too little for when they go into the winter, and then they can't make it through the winter. There's a 2-week period. And God is saying, well, how do you think that happens? And I'd be glad to talk evolution and debate and DNA with you, because it still doesn't answer that. Anyway, it's unbelievable. They crouch down and give birth to their young and deliver their offspring. Their young grow up in the open fields, then leave home and never return. Some parents are wondering if that's ever going to happen with their kids. It's okay. In the wild, it happens. Who gives the wild donkey its freedom? Who untied its ropes? I've placed it in the wilderness. Its home is the wasteland. It hates the noise of the city. Boy, Ben must have been really noisy back then. And it has no driver to shout at it. Okay. Will the wild ox consent to being tamed? Will it spend the night in your stall? Can you hitch a wild ox to a plow? Will it plow a field for you? Given its strength, can you trust it? Can you leave and trust the ox to do your work? So he's just pointing out one fact after another that there's someone in charge of all this. It's God. He has not fallen asleep. Again, if we think he's fallen asleep, maybe we need to go into nature and sit there and go, man, this is all working. This is all working well. God is active. And even though it feels like he's asleep in my life, I can look and see he's not asleep. And then this is kind of weird. The ostrich flaps her wings grandly, but they have no match for the feathers of the stork. She lays her eggs on top of the earth, letting them be warmed in the dust. She doesn't worry about a foot might crush them or a wild animal might destroy them. Yeah, so God's just pointing out, like, animals are so diverse. There's birds that lay eggs on the ground. That makes zero sense, right? That shouldn't work, but it does for some. She is harsh towards her young, as if they were not her own. She doesn't care if they die. Okay, animals don't, right? Like, they move on. For God has deprived her of wisdom. Interesting. He has given her no understanding. But whenever she jumps up to run, she passes the swiftest horse with its rider. Have you given the horse its strength or clothed its neck with a flowering mane? Do you give it the ability to leap like a locust? Its majestic snorting is terrifying. It is your wisdom. Is it your wisdom that makes the hawk soar and spread its wing towards the south? So the whole thing about birds and flying, that is, that's a crazy thing. If you want to be in all of that, they're doing this really cool stuff now where they're putting little cameras on hawks. Specifically, in the Middle East, they have these falcons that they hunt with. And it is crazy watching falcons. They're up in the air and they spot like a rabbit and how they're able to, they go through the trees and everything. It's unbelievable. And then if you're really bored, you can go and watch in Dubai, the tallest building. They take an eagle up there and let it go. And it's, again, it has a camera on it and it's soaring around and it's looking for its handler on the bottom and eventually spots its handler and drops like a mile in like a really short period of time and lands on the guy's arm. There's just cool stuff out there on YouTube. But God is saying, when you see that, be in awe. So it says, as it turns out, Job doesn't know as much as he thought. Don't we all? Even though the world that he lives in, and he should be familiar with it. At the end of God's investigation to dialogue, Job comes up short in his first response. Then Job answered the Lord and said, I am nothing. How could I ever find the answers? I will cover my mouth with my hand. I've said too much already. I have nothing more to say. He's been put in the right perspective. He now knows how big God is. And I think of all the times I've been so arrogant and so prideful, and I think I know so much, and God has this to say to us, where he goes and takes us on a cosmic tour, takes us on an earthly tour, and we really start to come to grips with who God is, to the point where we say, I've said too much, right? I have nothing more to say. God, you have not fallen asleep. I am wrong. You are right. Let me just continue on. God has made his first point. Job's many accusations of divine neglect or incompetence have failed. So important to hear that. And then it says, as it turns out, God is intimately familiar with every molecule and creature in his world and knows more about them than Job can comprehend. Just one more thing to ponder. So we've gone out to the cosmos. Okay, I don't understand how big the universe is. If you go down to the atom, I just want you to think for a second. It's going to have to do with the last point I make, the summary. So we always talk about atoms are made up of protons, neutrons, and electrons, right? And we just kind of think about that. We're like, oh, yeah, that's good. Well, just think about this one fact. So you have this, at that size, basically things work as magnets. So in the inside, you have a positive charge. And then on the outside, you have this negative electron spinning around so fast and it's so small that they can't identify where it is because a light photon would hit it and move it too much to get back to record where it is. That's how fast and small it is that's moving. Here's what I want you to think about. Every single thing is made up of this atom. If that electron goes a little too far out, it leaves. And when it leaves, it releases a ton of energy. If that electron gets a little too close, it goes in. Right? Because there's an opposites attract. Everything is being held together by this electron spinning around at just the right speed, right distance from the proton that is too small to even see with anything. That's what this whole Earth is made up of. These atoms that if it gets a little too slow or a little too close, boom, it goes in. It's over. That atom's done. Gets a little too fast, a little too far, gone. Zillions and zillions of atoms are all doing this at the precise speed, precise distance. And God knows that. In fact, some people think that's what Colossians is talking about when I get to the end of Colossians here. Let me keep going. Whatever reason God has for having allowed Job's suffering, neglect is not a viable option. But that's what we think. We constantly think God is not doing what he should be doing. He's neglected me. Job never does find out why he suffered, and neither does the reader of the book of Job. The goal of the book was never to offer that information. So interesting. Rather, the first divine speech makes it clear that God does know everything that transpires in his world, and his perspective on the universe has a wider range than any human will ever have. So we can't forget that. So here's what I want to summarize with. Let's go to Colossians. Christ is the visible image of the invisible God. He existed before anything was created and is supreme over all creation. Think back to what God was talking to Job about. He said to Job, he says, were you here, or he was being sarcastic. He's like, oh no, you were here before all this was created, right? Obviously, no. Who was there before it was all created? Christ was. God was. So that this should, the Old Testament reader would read this and be like, oh, wait a minute, this Christ is different than all the other prophets and all the other people. He was there from the foundation. For through him, God created everything in the heavenly realms and on earth. Isn't it interesting? Where did God start with Job? In the cosmos, the heavenly realms, and then went down to what was going on in earth. What does he say here in Colossians? Started in the cosmos and goes down to the earth. He made the things we can see and the things we can't see. So he made all the galaxies that are way, way out there that we can't see. Billions of them. He made the atoms that we can't see. It covers it all. Such as thrones, kingdoms, rulers, and authorities in the unseen world. Everything was created through him and for him. He existed before anything else, and he holds all creation together. Some people say this, if God truly fell asleep at the wheel, the atom doesn't work and this is all gone. That's a really interesting thought. Again, if God truly went to sleep at the wheel and is no longer making sure that electron is spinning at the right speed, right distance, every second of this existence, if he falls asleep at that, it all is gone. To verse 20, and through him God reconciled everything to himself. He made peace with everything in heaven and on earth by means of Christ's blood on the cross. So interesting that connect the heavenly realms, connect what's going on in earth, and then as it's continued to revealed or to be revealed, this ultimately points to the idea that Christ made us right with God through his sacrifice. And that now, not only are we not neglected by God, we're now adopted by God once we believe. Now it becomes this talk of family, where once you believe, you become a son or daughter of God. So not only does he know the hairs on your head, you're now his son or daughter. You're now being in his family. The God that is so big, as Louis Giglio says, you know, the universe fits here. I can't even make a spot that would represent Earth. But yet he can zoom in all the way to that tiniest part to know you as a son or daughter. It's unbelievable. And so my hope is that as we reflect on this, it allows us to handle suffering with the right attitude. This doesn't mean suffering's easy. That's why it's called suffering. It's hard. But we can, with the right attitude, get through suffering and know that there's more to it than it, what's going on at that moment, that there's a bigger plan. And one of the ways to remind yourself of that is to look at the stars, look at nature, and know that God is not asleep at the wheel. Let me pray for us. God, thank you for this section. I feel like it took a while to get to this point, but I know for me this point is significant. The idea that you are not neglecting us, that you're not asleep at the wheel. In fact, the complete opposite is true. You have everything under complete control. And we can take comfort in knowing that. And then I'm so thankful for in Colossians we see that not only do you have everything in control, then you give us this option to trust in you, to trust in what Christ has done, to then be adopted by you. Thanks for doing that. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.